Let's see what happens when we dare to color outside the lines. You're listening to Color Mixology, the debut podcast from Sherwin-Williams.
Hello, and welcome to Color Mixology by Sherwin-Williams, the podcast where we connect with the creative people who are shaping the design and color landscape. I'm your host, Sue Wadden. Last month, we had two experts in AI for design on the show, Jenna Gaidasek of AI for Interiors and Brandon Dorsey, the technology director at Vocon Architecture and Design. We went deep into the topic of embracing new technologies and letting creativity be fuel for your strongest AI-generated designs. If you're curious about using AI in your interior design work, definitely check it out. But today I'm super excited because we're going to get into a different type of design science and we'll hear from one designer who specializes in understanding how color impacts us psychologically and another who specializes in creating commercial spaces where everyone can thrive. Our first guest is world-leading behavioral design consultant, Karin Huller. Thanks so much for joining us, Karin.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Karin, we're so excited to have you here. This is a real rare opportunity to talk with somebody that has so much information on this topic. So we're going to just jump in. I would love for you to tell our audience what behavioral design consulting is.
Just to break it down in a nutshell, behavioral design uses color and design psychology to improve well-being, support positive mental health. And really, the whole thing is about influencing positive behaviors. So what I'm really interested in is in creating real measurable change. And so my work goes beyond the aesthetical, beyond something that is quite surface level. And I really want to investigate and go deep into human and social conditions and what influences us. And then I turn all of that into what it is about the human experience in balance with nature that I can create, that will create this positive change. Because if there's something we need in the world, right, we need our environments to nurture and nourish and support us in whatever area that is, whether that's residential, whether that's commercial, you know, brands, products, whatever that is, color is so powerful that I'm very much about looking at how we can do this from a behavioral level.
So how do you do this? How do you employ this behavioral psychology to what you do for design? Tell us everything.
So when I work with businesses and I work with, you know, and design professionals, because quite often I get brought in to troubleshoot. So they might have put a design scheme together or done something and maybe something's not working or the client's not happy or something doesn't feel right. And quite often I get brought in to have a look why. And so I have a process that I work through. So through all of my investigations, through all of my, through the many years, like nearly 20 years in doing this, is that I look for patterns of behavior. I look at the way that we work, the way that we respond, and very much again, still in balance with nature, because color psychology, I know it's got a bit of a bad rap and a lot of people calling themselves color psychologists. And so if you just put all that to one side, if you really are looking at creating change, we're looking at creating change from the behavioral level. So that's where I always start. I always look at what are the behaviors that we want to see in the space. So it's, you know, the context, what the intent is and what the outcome it is that you want. And when we're looking at, I mean, that's, you know, what I'm saying now is very, very high level. It's much deeper than that.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm going to ask you, like, so dig into like a specific example. What would be a way behavioral color science can help change a behavior in an interior?
So I'll give something that is really a very, very common one and just something that everyone will get straight away. So fast food restaurants don't just use red for the sake of using red. And it's got nothing to do with stimulating the appetite. That's a myth that red stimulates the appetite. What they want you to do is they want, and because their market is children. So they want children to get excited. And there's the whole pest of power. So they want the kids to get excited. But they, because it's fast food, they don't want people to sit and linger. They want people to get in there, eat quickly, and go, because that's their business model is, you know, this quick turnover. And what red is doing, red is helping to support the behavior that they want to see in their customers. So you wouldn't then go and use light red, because which is a soft pink, because that would do the exact opposite. So red physically stimulates, and it physically is a call to action. It physically gets us moving and motivated. So we're in, we eat, we're out. Pink is physically soothing, like a soft pink. So that would be more, we would get in there and we would just physically relax. And they don't want that, because they want people out. So they wouldn't use that as a color. No, because that's not their business model, because it doesn't match what they want to do. So that's just a, you know, I just give that as an example, because it's something that everyone understands. I'm sure virtually everyone has been to McDonald's sometime in their life. You know I did as a kid, and I was jumping around, you know, because I was just so excited because I was there. But it was, yeah, quick in and out. So, yeah, that's just an example.
Is there a physiological response that you could talk about that sort of would educate the listeners on what that means? Like, again, that stimulus, that red stimulus when it comes in. Could you speak to that a little bit? I think that would be interesting.
So what color does is when we take in color, and we take in color through our eyes, and again, this is going to be really just a very quick snapshot, but what we're doing is it's coming in through to the hypothalamus. And this is the same with all colors. All colors, we have an emotional reaction, an emotional response, and there are positive and adverse reactions or traits that we get from every color. It just depends on what the context is and whether we're feeling the adverse or the positive. So when it comes in through our eyes, it goes to the part of the brain, then, which is the hypothalamus, and that governs our, you know, like all our emotions, our metabolism, our stress, our appetite, our sexual reproductions, I mean, everything. And so what we are having is when we see red, and because of the wavelengths of red and the way that it does hit our eye and the response that we have to it, what the science and what the theory suggests is that it impacts us on a physical level. So red is therefore stimulating because it's so highly saturated, and highly saturated colors stimulate. And then a soft pink soothes, because softer colors are more soothing for us. So we are physically soothed with soft pink, and we are, can't think of the word I was going to say then. And so we are stimulated from red because of the saturation of the color.
Like, I've read before that your blood pressure elevates a little bit if you're,
our,
you know, surrounded
rate.
By red.
So it's like our pulse, yeah, the pulse rate. And so that's because that's the excitement. So we can be heightened from fear, because if we see red, we see blood, you know, we can go into a panic. So that can, we can go into overwhelm. So that's the adverse side. But then it could also be that we're excited. And so that heightened state can be excitement, or it could be panic and overwhelm. It depends on what the context is and what's happening as to which one you're going to feel.
So I think it's important to talk about then how color can positively affect our sense of well-being then. So if you can get heightened excitement with a color that's stimulating like red, talk a little bit about the other side of the equation, which is like colors for well-being, and what's been your experience there?
Yeah, so again, it's all to do with behaviors, because a lot of people think well-being means that we all pick really soft colors. And so we're almost anesthetized, like it's virtually turning our emotions off. So, you know, beiges and whites and light grays, they think, oh, this is calming. But what it can often do is it can have almost the same detrimental effect by switching our emotions off, to the same extent of switching them on too much. So all we've just done is swing from one side of what I call the pendulum to the, you know, to the other. I always go back to what are the behaviors that you want to have in that space, because well-being could actually be fun and joy if that is the context of the space that you're creating. And so therefore you would pick colors that were more lively, because you wouldn't go and pick gray, because how, you know, you don't have fun and joy and playfulness in gray, not for the majority of people. Do you know what I mean? So it's always down to what are the behaviors that you want to see in the space, and then it's creating the color palette and the design style that will support that. Because what it's doing on a subconscious level is that it is telling us to play. It's telling us to be excited. It's telling us to have fun. Or it's telling us, like in a spa, now is the time to relax, because all the colors are very soft and very soothing. And you wouldn't go around running around because the environment is telling us to relax. Right. So it does this all on a subconscious level. So it's really, really powerful, the impact and the effect that color can have on us.
So I'm curious where cultural symbolism comes in and personal preference into this. You know, ultimately, we're dealing with clients and their perceptions. So what challenges do you run into, or do you, related to cultural norms with color and sort of preference?
Great question. So I still go through my process of looking at the behaviors and looking at what's ideal for the space. And then I start looking at what the other considerations are, because you need to have something quite, like for me, the way I work is that I've got a solid baseline to work from. But then things can change, because it could be that there is a cultural significant color, or it could be that the colors that were picked for the behaviors might have a detrimental meaning in a certain culture. But then I've got something to work from. Do you know what I mean? So then sure. I know. And then a lot of personal associations is that this is when quite often I will have a conversation with the individuals, because what they're doing is they're making the design that is for somebody else about them. So if I don't like, you know, bottle green because it was the color of my school uniform, that shouldn't stop the design from going ahead using that color if it is the right color for the scheme. So that's when I have a chat with the stakeholders or whoever is involved to see how we can, you know, mitigate this, or how we can move beyond that and not let having the right color in the scheme be affected because they had a bad experience with it. Do you know what I mean?
I do. That is no small thing.
No, also. No. And also, you know, it is no small thing, because the emotional attachment to that color can be very, very strong and very traumatic. So it's really important that is handled with real care. And then there is people who are colorblind, people with low color vision. Then there's the neuro, you know, people who have, different neuro styles. There is so many other things that you then need to take into consideration. And so by doing that, that's how you start to really create, not even inclusive design, like, you know, a universal design, something that is.
So then on the flip side of that, are there colors that you would recommend to discourage certain behaviors? Do you ever take that approach in talking about, you know, things you want to stay away from in a space based on what the behavior of the space is going to
be?
That was a mouthful.
Yeah. I don't know if you heard about this, but in Australia, they had cigarette packaging, and they did the packaging in an olive green, and it was called the world's ugliest color. And they deemed this particular kind of sludgy, olivey green for cigarette packets. So when someone got the packet, they would have association straight away with this green, with it being kind of really sludgy and sort of decaying, which even when I say it just sounds awful. In the context of cigarettes, the whole idea was that they took the branding off and they put this green on, and the idea was that trying to deter you. And I think they might have introduced, I don't know if over here in England, if they just introduced the white plain packaging, so that it wasn't distinguishable, and hoping that that no one could recognize what brand, so people weren't walking around going, oh, I've got this brand. You know, they were trying to get people to stop.
Generic. Yes, yeah, unbranded. Yeah. That's interesting.
Yes, but color is used all of the time. You know, when things are on sale and we go into a shop and you see the red sale sign, that's to influence us to get excited and to buy on impulse. Even if we had no intention of buying, we see the sales sign, oh my God, I've got to have it. don't even. And a lot, all the logic has gone out the window at that point. At that point, you are so emotionally involved because the color is it's exciting, you know, to go and get this bargain. And then normally you get home and you go, why did I even buy that?
I didn't like, even need what? It.
So, yeah, color.
They always say that color sells, right?
Color sells.
It has an absolute impact on buying behavior. So let's talk a second about trends. I live in a world where color trends are constantly in the conversation that we put out into the world because we do see things shift and change. So I would say, and you had referenced, you don't always lean into trends, but there are movements in color that I think could impact behavioral specification. So for instance, dark colors are really trending here in the United States to create calming spaces, almost this sense of security and nurturing, almost cave-like, you know, you kind of cocoon. So it's not just light and ethereal, but it's also dark, rich colors that are important. Is this something you study and apply as these things change, or is it pretty separate? Like your psychological response to colors is kind of more constant than trends.
I'm fascinated by this because human behavior, look, we're always evolving. We don't stay static. So watching what happens in different countries and watching what is happening economically, socio-politically, what's happening in different peer groups, and then watching the colors that they pick, because what that is telling us is what people need. So this need to cocoon and this need to hide away, I don't know if that's really the right term, but people perhaps retreating and just don't want to know what's going on outside. And there's different ways we can do that. We can do that by numbing ourselves. We had a really big phase of going through grey here in the UK. And really, yeah, people were so stimulated outside that they would come home and in their grey homes, what they wanted the grey to do was to, you know, lower all of this emotional stress and load that they had. But what grey was actually doing, it was what they thought was calming them, it was actually draining them. So people were very, very tired in their own homes. Then they would wake up in the morning and need like a double espresso. And then they would go out into this chaotic, stimulating world. And so their emotions were low and then high. Do you know what I mean? So that's not healthy. So what I do is I look to see what it is that they're needing and what colors would support them in a better way, in a more healthier way, that wasn't this such a, you know, such a seismic shift in emotions, because that does not bode well for well-being or for you can't thrive in an environment like that.
I 100% agree. In fact, I can show an example. So I'm recording here in my dining room, and over our winter break, I painted it black. It's definitely a color that has been trending here in the United States, and I love the look. But you know what? I'm going to be repainting soon because simply the contrast is too high. I call it high lows, and it's too much contrast ratio for the small space that it's in. So I'm going to take it back to a softer, creamier neutral, because I want it to be sort of a more harmonious environment. So it's crazy, you know, as experienced as I've been, and I've been doing this a long time, I wanted to try this. It didn't work. So, you know, now I have the flexibility to go try something else, but it's fascinating. It's fascinating.
But it did work, because now you can feel that. And now you can see, my gosh, look at the effect that this color is having on me. It might be on trend, but it's not right for me.
Exactly.
And then instinctively, you just know something's not right. And so just because it is on trend or fashion, or because, you know, a lot of people over here in the UK, the neighbors have got it. So it must be a good color if they've got it.
For
do you
sure.
know what I mean? Like keeping
yes.
up with the Joneses. But really, it's about us really reconnecting back within and going, what is right for me? Because my home needs to nurture me and needs to support me.
Yes, absolutely. Well, I feel like we could go on and on about this topic because there's so much here. But it just, in a quick thought, what's changed over the last 20 years in understanding mental health and neurodiversity? I know if somebody asked me that, I think I would have an answer, which would be COVID, right? And our understanding of sort of wellness and well-being. Have you seen anything else that sort of shifted your perspective?
No, that was seismic. I think it was always coming. I'm not sure if designers really, because it was never seen as the sexy end of design.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what
Agreed.
I mean? So
yep.
I think it was always there, but only a few people really did it. And it wasn't necessarily seen as the fun, joyful, especially over here. Come COVID, it really then thought, actually, this is really important. And it's probably a good thing that came out of it, because people who are neurodiverse have set up their homes to really work and support them. And they could control their environment. Whereas coming back into the workforce, back into work, they couldn't do that. So this is really making everyone up their game to create environments that support everyone and that allows people with different needs to be able to self-regulate and to be able to control their environment in a way that allows them to do their best work. And I'm sure Jocelyn will agree with me, right? Yeah, because you've got to do your best work, and you can't go into a workplace and it holds you back. And that's why so many people don't want to go back into the workplace, because they get their needs met at home and they can do better work there. So yeah, there's a lot of change that needs to happen, and it is coming. But yeah, COVID definitely made a huge change. Yeah.
Would you say, if you had to characterize neurodiversity in one statement, it would be designing an interior based on the needs of the occupants? Is that, I'm trying to think of like a boilerplate statement for our listeners.
Yeah. So people who are using the space, and it has to be designed in a way, even has to be future-proofed for those that are still coming in that haven't come in yet, which is why I work with behaviors, because we already know the different behaviors that we will want in the space, in different spaces, so that people can move around and what I mean by self-regulating is that they can then choose the spaces that they want to work in to give them what they need at that moment in time. So bosses and managers have to be flexible, and it's a completely different way of working. But if you want your best out of your employees and you want them to really thrive and do their best work, it's a whole new way of in the workplace, instead of sitting at a grey desk and a wall of grey banked, because we're not worker bees, you know, we're not in a factory. We're human beings that need to be supported. So that's not a sound bite, but sorry.
That's okay. It's just a huge, huge topic, which
we're
only scratching the surface on. So how do you stay up to date on all of these pieces, parts, and information on color psychology, new discoveries in mental health, because I'm sure they're happening all the time now, and then design? What are some of your go-to resources if people want to learn more?
Yes. So I listen to lots of talks. I read lots of books. I read lots of journals, magazines. But I also look at in different industries. So what's happening in the food industry, what's happening in, lots of other industries. And because I've got quite a good solid baseline of color and design psychology, I look to see what I can map over. I go, if that is working in that environment and that's working in that industry, how can I bring that over and how does it map across into behavioral design? And then I come up with new theories, new hypotheses. I then put them into my frameworks. I test them, you know, because you have to constantly test and measure to see how things are going.
Okay. How do you test and measure? 2 seconds.
How do I test and measure?
Yes.
2 seconds? Well, in 2 seconds, you look at what the behaviors were before. You look at what the change is and what you want to create as a change. And then you measure at the end. It's far more complex than that, but it's that.
The result. Wow, that's amazing. Well, okay. So you have some resources that you could share that you've created, and I'm sure our listeners would love to check those out. So do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yes, thank you. On Instagram, I'm Karen_Huller_color. And then I have a website that's karenhuller.com. And there is a free resource there, which is an ebook all about color that people can download. And then I've got a little mini course on a special offer after that. And then one thing I haven't said is that I'm the author of The Little Book of Color. So this book, but what they can do is and this is a book for the everyday color lover. But what people can do is they can go to the littlebookofcolor.com website, and they're the first chapter, they can download that for free.
Wonderful.
To see if they resonate with it.
If they want to know more, I love that. We're going to welcome to the show Jocelyn Mackey. Jocelyn is NCIDQ certified and registered interior designer in the Metro Atlanta area, and she is the founder and principal designer of Accessible Design Studios. Jocelyn, thank you so much for coming to the show.
Thank you for having me, Sue.
Well, we have talked about a lot in this first half hour, so I want to talk about your space, which is a hot topic as well. So Accessible Design Studios is all about health and beauty in commercial and design. So tell us more about that and what led you to this to specialize in this type of design.
Well, actually, Accessible Design Studios niche came as a result of during COVID. So I actually have a broader design background that comes from senior living, from hospitality. I've designed everything, I say, from the only things I haven't designed is K-12 schools and prisons. So
maybe sometimes the same thing. Right.
Right. So if you look, I was actually designing sky clubs for one of our larger airlines. And then when COVID hit, that's when I decided, okay, well, I'm going to, you know, I have my certification, my license, and I've launched out then and kind of narrowed down to health and wellness because that was really my passion. And they were small enough projects for me to just knock out because we were all locked in. So until I could grow my team, get my storefront coming from a more corporate architectural background. So that's what you would see. But actually, my love and passion falls in everything Karen has said. So I didn't know if I could refer back to a lot of things that were in her segment of when she was speaking.
Yeah, and that's why we wanted to sort of bring you guys together to talk about the behavioral side, but then the application side as well. So talk a little bit about how health and beauty has changed. Talk about it since COVID, right? We all experienced this global experience. And then what have you seen that's really changed the nature of design in that space?
So as far as health and beauty is concerned, more people have amplified the need for health, for self-care. So if we want to talk about that a bit, it's gone from where we were hustling and bustling and everything was about outside of ourselves, growing other people's interest to turning into now we're locked in, COVID has hit, mental health issues have risen, and now how do we nurture ourselves? So then from that point, there's been an increase in spas, in med spas, in all of those things in the United States, and people turning to better ways to take care of themselves. And so the need for our focus to switch to, you know, more health and wellness industry is where we fell, and that happened because during COVID.
I think that's an interesting distinction. I can, you know, I would say 15 years ago, there was a spa, that's where you went for a facial or, you know, whatever the thing that you love to do. And that was once or twice a year. But now do you see many more? I want you to tell the audience this. I don't want it to come from me, but like, what other applications are you seeing that are new? I don't know, micro spas. What are we calling these? It's very specialized. So, you know, like grab and go facials. You don't, you know, you can quickly go get, you know, obviously your nails done. That's a thing. You can go to infrared sauna spas. You can go to cold plunge spas. Like, it's just, it's awesome the amount of well-being enterprises that are going on. So talk about a little bit of the design aesthetic that's in the spa space now, in that space, not just spa space.
Well, it's all about what the owner wants to see. So everything that I do is how, what kind of reaction and feeling do you want your client to get when they walk in the door? Is it that you want it to be moody? Or is it that you want them to feel uplifted? What it always goes to, what is their brand? Who is their clients? What is their target market? And when they walk into their space, how are they able to connect with that brand? And a lot of that is done through a feeling. So if we can go back to the neurology of the situation is how the textures, the colors, the lighting, it all goes back to how do you want this client to feel when they walk into your space. So some of our spas are dark. They're dark, they're moody, they walk in and it's cavernous. It's because that's what the brand is, and that's who their clients are. And then some of them are very light and bright, which you would consider your typical spa, sandy, beige, bright, your typical spa experience. And the gamut, it runs the gamut, but it always goes back to my first conversation with my client is, what is the feeling? And then how can I use color and textures and lighting to all the science that goes behind that to drive that feeling, so that when their client walks in the door, the first thing they get is that feeling. And because it's all a feeling that they're selling. So even though they have all the same services, it all goes back to, what do you want your client to feel?
And how they differentiate from the mass that's out there. I get that. So we've talked a lot about commercial applications, but I would pose the question to both of you. You know, what are some ways that homeowners could imply the principles that you employ and have talked about? And I guess we'll start with Jocelyn.
Well, I mean, like Sue, I mean, I've also written a book.
This
is me. And my focus is designing for the senses. So it's all about neuroscience.
Oh, wonderful.
This is my passion. And this is what I drive into my spaces. I would echo everything she said, as well as going into the neurodivergent. So along with that, I have a client that we're working with now who does autistic services, autistic clinic. And it goes back to, you know, that red versus the paler shades of red. And which one is more appropriate for their client. And as she said, our homes, we can dial that in and make that make sense at home. And so sometimes it's just, how do I communicate to my commercial clients that we do need to design for the senses? We need to design in a universal way. And we can't just narrow into who we think we should be, but we have to be a platform for a multitude of people with different needs. And so in the home, you know, we can say, you know, what is our need at home? So when you, if you're in an environment where you're extremely stressed at work and everything is highly driven, then at home, you're probably going to need the opposite, right? So those people probably, you know, would either want something brighter, lighter, uplifting to their senses, or, you know, just the opposite. You know, if you're somewhere where the cocooning or what you thought that you needed during that time, so maybe is that what you need? So it's more about talking about what is your lifestyle outside of that house, so that when you come home, you can be nurtured. And how does color and texture and lighting affect you? And how can we support you at home so that you can, you know, gird yourself in a way that you're ready to go back out that door and deal with all those things that may be triggering, and in a neurodiverse means really triggering to those people. And then be home and be nurtured with what is it that you need at home.
So I think we all understand the calming, you know, we want to come as our home is sanctuary. We want to create a space that, you know, we feel good in, and we are renewed and energized when we come home after a long day. How do people add high energy into a space? Maybe for your kitchen, you know, you entertain a lot. You want to take it up a notch in some spaces. Do you, can you guys offer any insights for homeowners on ways to elevate? Because we are so centered on well-being. Like, how do you amplify at home?
Absolutely. So at home, I mean, I would say nurturing, but nurturing is not the same for everyone. As we go back to Sue, I mean, what Karen was saying, nurturing might mean one thing to one person and something to someone else. So nurturing to someone that loves color and saturated color, that might be what they need at home. You know, all of that, the things that they find inspiring might be the rainbow of color, you know, and that might be what their need is. Like, how do you want to feel at home? And so that the answer is always going to be different for everyone based on what's going on with them outside of the home. So if your home's going to be your haven, your nest, it's what is it at home that you need? Is it the soothing bright? Do you want to feel like you're at a day at the beach? And I can give you an example. So when we bought our home initially, when our kids were younger, the walls were those jewel tones. So we had the green, the red. However, my husband was fresh out of the military as a Marine. Hoorah, high energy.
Right.
With little kids. And so I learned quickly, he's being triggered. He's being triggered by the red. He's somewhat colorblind. So he's also seeing the green as red. So,
it was everywhere.
Right? Yes. So, and it was literally taking all of that out of our space, the heavy wood, because back then it was heavier wood furniture, taking mm-hmm. that out of the space and ushering in beachy tones, colors of outdoors. And my kids said, basically, Dad has turned into the Zen master. Like it just, because that's what supported him and that's what he needed. Where some people, they walk into that, that would be mind numbing. And so they need the color to give them the energy and the, you know, so that they feel good at home. But it all usually has a lot to do with, you know, how you're wired, but also home being a haven. How do we set up that as a structure that nurtures you so that when you go out the door, you have somewhere to come back to that recharges you to get you ready to go back out the door the next day?
Jocelyn, that was awesome advice and a great example. So before I jump over to Karen, how can people find you and how find your book?
Absolutely. So Accessible Design Studios with an S is our website. On there, you'll also find a little link that has a lot of little free resources and tips about interior space and such. My book, you can Google it. There's a lot of different avenues to find it, or you can just go to Amazon. And it gets into all things design as it relates to the senses and everything that Karen said. Basically, ditto. It's in the book. So as you were speaking, I could nod my head and say yes. There's so much about this and everything from how restaurants intentionally the red. But also the yellow makes you kind of have a happy banter. So they want you to have great fun and conversation, but they want you to leave quickly.
Right.
And then you find that restaurants that aren't red and yellow usually use the blues because right. they know that their food's going to take a long time. And so they want you to linger, but feel relaxed while you're doing it. So I just appreciated everything she said. And it's so in my book.
This is, yes, you guys are very, very well paired guests. I will definitely say that. And we'll put all the resources that we've talked about in the show notes. So people obviously are interested. They can find, you know, that sort of resource. But Karen, can you help a homeowner through this process as well? Your take on how to bring this sort of behavioral science to their space?
Yeah. So pretty much what Jocelyn said, I mean, it was, I was nodding as well because we are all different. No human is, you know, human being is the same. We are complex and it is personal. And our needs are personal and they do vary from, you know, even from day to day what we need. So I would probably just, the only thing really to add on from what she said was that looking at every room in the house has a different need, a different function. So I'm not very much about, you know, doing the whole house the same, but it's looking at what the different needs are in the different rooms. How is it that you want to think, feel, and behave in every space? And then creating with the colors, with the textures, with the shape, with the patterns, with the lighting, creating that scheme that gives you that, what you need. Because, you know, your example of if someone might want a really relaxing living room, but they might want a lively kitchen. So I need a lot of color in the kitchen to be motivated to cook. Because if it's really relaxing, I'll be really relaxed and I won't want to cook. So the colors would need to, you know, excite me. So, you know, to answer that question that you asked before about, you know, how if someone wants a more lively kind of a kitchen, is picking more saturated colors. So the higher the saturation of color,
the more stimulating that color will be. So that is oranges, that is bright yellows, that is...
Terracottas.
Well, terracottas could be a little bit more soothing.
They could be.
But the bright yellows, you know, things that are really high saturation, that is, there's no relaxing or sitting back with those. Those colors are like, come on, you know, let's get moving, let's play. So you wouldn't want those colors in the bedroom because you need to sleep. And you need a bedroom that lets you sleep, but most importantly, that lets you restore, which is, excuse me, what a lot of people aren't getting. They're not getting good quality restorative sleep that allows their nervous system to relax, that allows their whole body just to relax so that when they wake up in the morning, that they are fully restored and energized. Quite often they wake up and they're still exhausted and still tired. So that's why every space would have a different function. And so the colors would be different. And it's not to make it look like, this is a saying that somebody used that I love. It's not like to make your house look like Disneyland on acid, right? It's not to do that as well, because you're going to have soothing colors. You're going to have mid-tone. You're going to have, you know, saturated colors, stimulating, soothing. So you're going to have a mix depending on how it is that you want to feel in that space.
Right. Would you recommend, you know, for a homeowner, put a pen to paper. When you start thinking about doing a room, write it down. Like, what are the things that you want to experience when you go into this particular room? Is that a good place to start, just to take some time?
Yeah, don't start with the colors, because if you start with colors, you'll get so emotionally trapped in it. Oh, I like this one. I don't like this one. So don't look. So I always say it's like Fight Club, you know, the first rule. And even with my clients, they go, well, where are the colors? I go, we don't start with color first. We start with, what are the behaviors? Yeah. How do you want to think? How do you want to feel? How do you want to behave? What's the purpose of the space? How are you going to use it? What behaviors do you want to see people doing in this space? What's the reactions, the responses? And then when you've got that, and that is what my book would then help with, is looking at then what colors will elicit that, because it's not just one color. It's putting a palette of colors together that will create that. Then you start going and looking for those colors that match what you've written down.
Jocelyn, what about you? What would you say? Pen to paper, same thing?
Absolutely. So, I mean, before we get into this color palette, it's once again, what is it? What is the response? What do you need to receive in this space? How does this space support your life? And then from there, we can start talking about color. And then one of the things is, I may start speaking of a color that you've had a negative reaction to. What, you know, you might have been in a car accident and the car that hit you was purple. Well, now you have a negative feeling about purple. Okay, so maybe we don't use purple, but we can also use other colors, or maybe a different tone or saturation of that color to still get you there, but not specifically, you know, grape, which might have been the color of the car. So exactly. I mean, and everything that Karin has said, I would ditto it. It's, how do you want that space to feel? How does this support you? How are you using it? And then if you do need one space that's highly saturated, energetic, do you need a pause or a neutral zone between that and the next space, right? So that your whole house doesn't present, but that you can weave that the color throughout. So it's still harmonious. It's not, you know, you're not singing a different song in each space, but it's a complete harmony from one space to the next, where you can take that vibrant color and maybe just in a piece of art on a wall that's more of a subdued space. And then you take another color from that overly saturated space that's energetic, and maybe you put that in another space so that you can kind of, you know, weave it through the space. But then every space doesn't have to be a carbon copy. It's what do you need, and how does each space in your home support you? What I love is a lot of people are doing this instead of their kitchen. They're making that fun space their powder room, their small half bath, and they just can go crazy. And that's really a place where you can experiment. And then realizing that paint is paint. You can paint experiment, see what you love, live with it for a while. And if that's not what it is, then you can take that, learn from it, dial it down, and then try another color. Or bring in textiles, and then from there be able to say, okay, these are the colors. This is how I'm responding to these things. Figuring out why. A lot of people don't even know why they like what they like, especially if it's in their home. They don't know necessarily what it is. But if you like something, you see it outside, bring it in, live with it for a while, and then maybe you can start identifying what it is about that you like, and then use that as a stepping off point for that space.
Build from there. Well, we are just at time. You guys have been an excellent, excellent guest. I so appreciate all the insights. Again, people can read your books, right? If we've confused them even more about how to select color, there are great resources here, and we just appreciate the conversation. And thank you guys both so much for joining Color Mixology.
Oh, thank you for having me. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.